The next speaker, it's Edgar Oluguna from Microsoft. Yes. He's living in Dallas, near Dallas in the United States, and he came all the way to Göttingen to talk about Microsoft support for the Samba community. Let's go.
Thank you. Yeah, the mic is on, so that's great. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I see a lot of new faces. I'm pretty happy about that. Hey, Nadia. So just to introduce myself, I have been with the protocol teams for about 10 years now. I worked with most of the Samba guys, I guess. They all know me. And before that, I used to be a developer implementing protocols. So protocols have been my life for quite some time. I used to implement non-Microsoft specs, like ITU, IETF, ETIS, and all those telecommunication standards. So I came from a different background, no Windows experience at all. And for the past 10 years, I have been supporting the Microsoft open specification effort. So just before we start, just let a few people come in. Okay. More people are coming. So more familiar faces and some new ones. Yeah. So this talk, it will not be technical. So just to let you know in advance, it will build upon some of the things that Tom mentioned this morning, but with a different twist to it, different flavor. So what do you want to hear about today when you hear about support? So I will briefly tell you that what we have been doing is part of empowering every implementer of Microsoft OpenSpec to achieve more. That's the overall thing that we are contributing for so long. And when I was trying to put slides together for these presentations, one thing came. We have been trying to make Windows a better interoperable platform, while you guys have been trying to make Samba what? Guess what? Opening Samba to a wider world, right? That's what you have been doing for 17 years. One thing I can say, which is the big takeaway I want you to get from this talk, is that the whole thing we have been doing, it has mutual benefit to our common customers. So that's the main takeaway of this talk. So the quick walk through my agenda. Today I will talk about who we are as a developer support team, what we do, how you can reach out to us if you need help. And then I will talk about the different type of support we provide, whether it's reactive, I call it reactive, or active support, and then some proactive interesting thing we have been doing also as well. And then we'll conclude. So a little bit about us. Who are we? So instead of talking about the whole thing, who we are protocol developer support. So I like to call myself an engineer who is counting bytes. When people ask me, what do? I count bytes. You count bytes for Microsoft? I say, yes, it's pretty fun. How do you count bytes, right? So I have to read code. I'm a developer who doesn't write too much code. I have to read the code, interpret the code. I have to assess whether the protocol packet is actually building what it's supposed to build. Then I need to investigate whether that matches what is documented. So it's pretty highly technical in nature, but I consider myself like I need to debug and count the bytes to make sure it's proper, because when you're talking about protocol, you talk to each other. If you build the right thing, you send it. The other side does the right thing, then you can communicate. Otherwise, it will break somewhere. So that's the whole thing. And I came from a Linux and Solaris background, no Windows at all. And some people in my team, they have been working on Windows for 20 years. Some, they know deeply Exchange. Some know Windows drivers. We have a bunch of people from different backgrounds. So it's pretty fun, and people always bring different perspective on the table. We have two sides of the house, which is called Microsoft Office Division, which is all the productivity related protocols. And then we have Windows, which is very big as well. So what do we do? We do the open spec. The object of our support is the open spec. So I want to say it again. The object of our support is the open spec. We have about, I think I didn't count well, it's more than that for Windows, more than 500 for sure for Office. So it's a lot of spec out there. And we focus on making sure the spec are accurate, and also we deal with any interop-related question on the open spec. So that's the broad umbrella where we operate in. And who do we work with? We work with you guys, you know, developers passionate about implement. We also deal with some people from the academia sometimes. I find that's funny and interesting every time, because they are very deep into one thing and they come to you and they challenge what we have written in the spec, so which is fun. And and you know, anytime we have a customer, whether internal from even within Microsoft or outside, our main goal is to unblock the customer, basically. We want to unblock you guys so you can proceed doing what you're doing and having fun. And we also want to make sure the spec is accurate so that anybody is facing a similar issue, they can have whatever they need. So now, before I continue and delve a little bit in different type of support that we offer, let me step back here and say that we don't support the product. When I say reactive, a lot of people will think, hey, you know, reactive, it's a break fix type of thing. Something breaks and then it's not what we do. We don't support the product. The object of our support is the spec. It's a specification. But Microsoft has implementation of those specifications, which is how the specs are written, right? So if you have a break fix issue in the field, you call support. People on the platform or product support, they will help you to restore your service, because we don't know how to configure those things. Like, let's say if he asks me a question, hey, I'm sending this packet and then you're returning this error, I will go and debug it to the dot and find out why. But if you ask me how to configure it, I might not be the best person to configure for you. So I wanted to call out that. So how to reach out to us? It's pretty straightforward in reactive mode. It means you're working with the spec. And actually, you find out that something's not right, or you're doing your design and you couldn't understand something we have written there. So then you need assistance from us. You come to us, or perhaps you're just studying a protocol scenario that, you know, it doesn't make too much sense for you to proceed. So you come to us and you can send an email, or you can also just post something on the forum. Just keep in mind, the forum is public. Maybe it doesn't apply too much to the Samba folks. You guys always, I think most of your email is somewhere stored online, right?
Yeah.
Everything. So, yeah. So it doesn't apply too much to you guys, but yeah. So, but if you want a private communication, you use email, because we will deal directly with you and nobody will know about what you're discussing. It happens sometimes, not most of the times for you guys, but yeah. So the forum is a community base, and you guys, your email is also community base. Everybody can see and respond, and I think sometimes a little bit chatty, but that's okay. So, now, What makes a good protocol support request? If you ask a question, it's like a chef. You're giving instruction how you want your steak to be done. Well done. You want this type. You give proper guidance, and then you have a good outcome. So we love that you help us help you. Because if the question comes and we're kind of scratching our head, we have to make a lot of assumptions. And if we go in the wrong direction, guess what happens? It delays. So if you help us, we can help you better and hopefully faster. I mean, Andrew is smiling, I know. So yeah, we require that you describe the scenario, make it as accurate as possible, talk about the document. Remember, we deal with more than 400 different specs, and sometimes we don't receive question on one for a while, so we may forget something that we deeply knew before, so have to go back and do it. And we serve the whole world. So, and share your finding. Maybe you try something and it worked, and you figure out, if you tell us, it can lead us in the right direction faster. And I always approach this protocol investigation with the assumption that any claim could be fallible. So maybe the claim in the spec may not be correct, or maybe the claim that the customer is making may not be correct, or maybe my own assumptions are not correct. That's how I approach it, and so I can have an open mind to find out what's happening. But having a good crafted request and then some good data from you guys, it's really, really valuable. So that's briefly about us and what we do. Now I will talk about the different type of support. The other bulk of our cooperation is definitely at events, like Samba XP, and to a broader extent, a lot of other events where we do deep debugging and investigation. So when you go to event, it's interesting because support is there and you have access to support. You can collaborate with the test suite team. We do side-by-side debugging. I think a lot of members of the Samba members here, they can testify for that. Sometimes some long days, or most of the times, I should say, which is quite fun. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. I love this. And yeah, we can resolve things. One thing I really enjoy is something which seems almost impossible to do in several months. We can get it done in a few days. I think that's pretty interesting and pretty powerful. When we are together and we are focused, there's no distraction, and we can achieve a lot more. And we often have a product group people available at most of those events, so we get to facilitate the interaction with them whenever needed. And sometimes we give some talks about some troubleshooting techniques as well. In a broader sense, we also have some other maybe not so tangible benefit. We got some great talk this morning from Tom Talpe and from Lutz from Google. So you listen to state of the art in the industry, which is great. You get to meet a lot of people, networking, absolutely fantastic. And then if you go to other events, like SDC, then you test against so many other implementations. So events have a lot of benefit. And you have live assistance from us. We are there, right there. That's how I call it, active support. That's probably one of the reasons why I stay in this team for so long. You know, I can meet my customers and work with them. So it's pretty fun. Now, where do we meet Samba folks? I mean, any person who doesn't belong to the Samba team here can name. Where do we meet the Samba people? Yeah, maybe you can respond. Where? Here? Where? Can you come up with somewhere else? SNIA, yes. SNIA, yeah. So I think we met you guys over the years. It's roughly 4 different locations, I believe, maybe 3, mostly here in Göttingen, or some IXP, I should say, sometimes not here, and on Redmond campus. We have different type of events. In the past, we used to have a lot of events, different types, and I recall members like Mathieu Patou, Chris is still here, and Steve French, they used to come. I used to see them several times the same year. Not once, not twice, several times. Because we used to have ADs, like even dedicated to AD authentication, different type of flavor. And we see different people through the year. And we have some constant people. We see them twice a year, and some other people more. Andrew can recall those days. And SDC, typically followed by the Samba Interop in Redmond as well. So that's pretty intense week, or intense 2 weeks. Now let's look back a little bit. So I didn't try to put together numbers because it would be so boring and not interesting. But I think for 10 years, when I started counting, we have met you guys for over 25 different events. And I just stopped. I said, okay, 25 is a good number. Let's stop there. And do you guys agree if I call it coding camp when you meet? But that's how I view it personally. You know, no, nobody told me to use that. But you know, I said, should I ask a permission? Or I said, yeah, I think it's pretty right. Yeah, it described it well. And it's your agenda. You control the agenda. You decide what you want to work on, and we're just there, you know, to help you, support you, Yeah, I mean they are not difficult, so that's okay. Yeah, and then you have access to some product group resources whenever you ask for, and we try our best to arrange for that and get the right people to talk to you. It's not always easy, but, you know, we do our best. And you have us, people from support. We are dedicated to you guys whenever we come to work with you, so that's great. And then we do a lot of testing and debugging, yeah. So what else? If we're looking back, like Steve French mentioned today, bug fixes. Yeah, bug fixes, right, Jeremy? Bug fixes. I think that would be the number one thing I would put on top of the list, right? Bug fixes. And I personally enjoyed one thing. People don't talk a lot about the test cases that you guys add to SMB Torture. But I have seen it in action, so I can tell, right? Raf, just last year, he was coding some test cases, and it was pretty funny what he was doing, and figure out different aspect of persistent handles, and some of the things he was doing is maybe it's not too legal, but it's okay, it's a test case. Just throw the packet and see what happens. So, and these test tools, actually your SMB Torture, you may know or may not know, other implementers use it to validate their implementation in the industry. So it's pretty good. People ask us questions. They say, hey, I run SME Torture, this test case, and then here's what happened. Can you explain that? So even your test case say it passed, they don't agree, and they come to us and say, I don't understand why the test case says it passed. So, and we have to try to dig into that and figure out what's happening. So it's pretty interesting. And then you also have the luxury to use our protocol test suite.
You could use
ours too. I don't know for that. I don't know how people decide. Maybe they do. I'm not aware. But
the very first patch that came from Microsoft was actually a man page for SMB Torch.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, good. So I think over the years, you guys have used a variety of test tools, file server, NetLogon, authentication, KDC, LDAP. Hey, Nadia, LDAP. And replication, Matt, Andrew and Matthew. they can tell us something about that. Active Directory, of course, and I think last time you were in Redmond, you use it quite a bit, and you file bugs too. You know, you and Garmin. So now you're automating in your lab, and you're using it. So that's pretty good. And if you find bugs, please do file it because they will improve it. You know, we are there for that. So these test tools, of course, they are used by many people more and more as an automation validation tool, which is a little bit surprising. I think that wasn't the intended purpose. It was more for functional testing, but people started doing that, so which is great. So we have better test coverage and better interrupt in the industry. And we need to keep doing that, of course. Yeah. Now, if we look at the things we are doing now, because what happens? Like, after the interrupt lab, what happens? Typically, what happens? This is a question for the Samba developers here. What happened after the interrupt lab?
We sleep.
Thank you for being so honest, Andrew. I didn't expect that, but I'll take it. So I think, in my opinion, there are some competing priorities. People have other priorities, and some projects get put on hold. And ultimately, the momentum is lost. I mean, you have achieved so much, but the momentum is lost. So I think, was it 2 years ago? We had an interesting discussion with Andrew, and he said, hey, why don't we talk? Sometime when we have some questions, maybe we can talk again. We used to do that a long time ago. And, you know, we found a new model, a new way of doing it, which can be more productive. And we started, and then we have seen some results, and Andrew probably can tell more than I can. So we have been talking every often with the Catalyst AD team. And we, for almost 1.5 years now, I think so, yeah, pretty regularly. And we discuss ongoing protocols, issues that they have, you know, the project and what kind of question they have. It's pretty focused meeting, it's short, and we discuss. And I think one thing I like is they have interrupt in mind when they're designing. So they think through and they ask, hey, we're doing this, this is what the spec says, we're doing this, but we see these other things, how do you think it's going to interrupt? So we look at those issues ahead of time, which is great. And one notable example was when we were doing some AD schema. Actually, I advise you that you should do that. So we should take on that project, and because I think it would be very beneficial for you guys to be able to upgrade your schema so you can support the newest Windows OSs. And then you agreed, and we embarked on that journey. And it was a pretty interesting learning as well along the way. And we have been discussing, I think it's still an ongoing discussion, how would NTLM deprecation impact Samba's work? I think this is big. And since we communicate with you guys often, it's good that we get your feedback to know, and also you guys can come up with ideas what you think we should be doing. Yes. Yes. He has a question, Mike.
So NTLM deprecation. Actually, that's the first I've heard that you're. Oh, sorry. NTLM deprecation. That's the first I've heard that you're actually thinking of doing that. I think that's a really nice idea. But have you any idea what would replace it for standalone non-domain join servers? Do you have an alternative protocol in mind?
So right now they're working on a plan. I don't think they have like a solid plan. They're discussing different ideas. So they're still working on that. We're getting feedback on how it would implement. There are different things. But I think what's happening is it's going to be similar to some local Kerberos, because that's pretty standard in the industry. Yeah. Apple is doing that. that's one of the ideas that's floating around, and then
some of it is certificate-based PKU to you.
Yeah. So
that's been experimented with. There's a number of challenges, obviously, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So just to add to your question, it looks like in the enterprise environment, it might be easier to solve than in the non-enterprise. So that's where it comes into play, that we need to know what kind of scenario you guys deal with, because your outreach is broader. It's much broader.
The Chrome OS team, for instance, completely disallow any MTLF, only developers. You won't, they won't even connect if it's MTLF.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's a
good move.
Yeah.
That's a good move.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's a good move, yeah.
Throw out SMB1
and there.
So, how would you qualify Samba's outreach now in the Linux world? What do you think? Significant, you would say? Yeah, go ahead. I would like to hear on that. You know.
So I would say we were significant if we could get Rich Ackles into the Linux kernel.
But, okay.
But as we can't, I would say we're not as significant as we'd like to be.
Okay.
This, as Steve mentioned in his talk, there's still a lot of voodoo and rumor around whether SMB is a slower protocol than NFS. And I think some of Steve's numbers show that we can be at least as fast, if not a lot faster.
Yeah.
And so right now, SMB and Samba are still seen as that thing that's used to talk to Windows, mm-hmm. rather than this is a core part of Linux protocols and technology. And it would be I would love to get to change that, but I think that's going to take some time.
Okay. I think this ties in very nicely to my comment I will be making now. So 10 years ago, who could have imagined the outreach of Samba today? Nobody, right? And how more pervasive will it become? Who knows, right? So I believe the future is you guys' opportunity. The journey is your opportunity. So while we have been busy making Windows a better interoperable platform, Samba has been busy making Samba a better interoperable. So we believe that our view is that by helping Samba developers making Samba a better interoperable platform, you are also creating a better story, interrupt story in the industry. So that's why we believe that in proactive Samba's engagement. We think it's pretty good for the industry as a whole. So the journey is your opportunity. So it's up to you guys how you want to get there. But we encourage a proactive engagement with you guys because we believe it's good for the industry. With that, if you have any more questions, what question do you have? Question from non-Samba members, non-Samba team members. So maybe I can ask a question. How many people have submitted a request to DocHelp the past year? Pretty good, pretty good. How many people have requests in the pipeline that they didn't submit? Oh, they were like, oh, I will submit. None? Good. So, yeah, if you have any question, yeah, go ahead. Sure.
So the Windows test coverage is still interesting to me, in that a lot of the test tools that are done from Windows to Windows basically still operate at the Win32 layer. So there are Win32 test programs that run through the redirector against the Windows server. And at least for us, the ones that find out the really interesting and weird parts of the protocol are the ones that run natively, that basically handcraft packets that go against Windows. And I'm thinking specifically like the question I had on DocHelp recently about issuing a flush call on a directory handle. And mm-hmm. and the first response, I don't know who took it on DocHelp, was, well, you can't do that. And it's like, well, actually, Windows accepts it, and it turns out that it was at the Win32 layer that was filtering it out, saying, no, that's a stupid thing to do. I'm going to return invalid operation. But when you actually issue that call over the wire, the server accepts it and maybe does something. You know? So it's like that kind of...
Coverage.
Yeah, I think... would it be worthwhile for you guys maybe to port SMB Torture to Windows using the it should work using the Windows subsystem that you already have on the Linux subsystem on Windows.
I think that feedback.
You might be able to just sort of at that point, people who've just got Windows servers and clients can also run those test tools against Windows servers, you know, without having to say, I've got to do
question.
Native.
Actually, okay, go ahead, because I was going to ask you a question.
A Linux environment on Windows?
Well, you...
What's the benefit of porting into Windows?
Well, no, I meant was running, you know, you've got that Linux subsystem. Running it under that...
You should just run on that.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
You could boot a virtual machine.
Well, okay. I'm just thinking... Because
making it a little easier to run the app.
Yeah.
I don't mean necessarily doing a Win32 style port of the code. I mean basically making sure that that's something that developers run on a regular basis.
That's an interesting question.
Because it should just run on the Windows Linux subsystem.
Yeah.
You should be able to run that.
I hear what you're saying. So the test runs on. The Linux subsystem, but doesn't use our SMB redirector.
Yes, that's right. I think you'll find weird little corner cases there.
Yeah, so I think that's very interesting. So the reason being, you don't want somebody to go and deploy like a whole Linux VM or install Linux just to set up everything.
Yeah, that's like Tom says, that should just run on Windows.
So let me step back a little bit, because you mentioned Win32 APIs, and because the protocol test suite we have, actually, as you probably know, we build a packet. We don't use the Win32 APIs. That's one of the reasons. So the test tool, it just exercises the protocol by just crafting the packet and sending it on the wire.
But it doesn't get everything. That's what I mean.
Add something. The Microsoft test tools are written to test the document.
Mm-hmm.
We have to hold the microphone if somebody hands
me. Yeah.
So the Microsoft test tools are written to test the document. In fact, they're generated from the document. They analyze all the shoulds and musts and things and write test assertions to test those sentences, literally. And so they test the protocol as written. The advantage of, and there are client tests and server tests, and they have their own subtleties, which one they're doing. It's an artificial client testing the server, or it's an artificial server testing the client, right? And so there's a lot of weird stuff going on. Samba Torture is a third-party native client, right? It is a client which is written to Samba's requirements and Samba's previous experiences, not to the document and not to the Windows behavior. So SMB Torture has been really interesting to us because it does things that we didn't expect.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't write it in the document. We didn't design it into Windows, but here it is, real packets on the wire. The directory permission is a really good example. The Windows client never emits a flush on a directory. It stops it before it even gets to the wire. So Samba issued that, and sure enough, the server executed it. That actually was covered in the document. Apart from one permission check that was missing, and we're correcting it, all the other behavior is in the document. How the flush is supposed to act, it doesn't really do anything, mind you, but if it's on the root of a volume and it has local administrator privileges, then it has special behavior. But that's really hard to export over the wire, both those conditions.
And so, you know, SMB Torch is really useful to us.
Yeah.
I actually thought we did run it from time to time.
Do we?
I'm a little surprised that Edgar says we're not.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure there's some folks who've been running it. Yeah. But we don't run it daily on as a test of Windows, for instance. But, you know, it does get run, and it is a valuable tool.
So just to add to it, one thing that I learned from the protocol test tools, I was challenging the test tool at the beginning, maybe more than you. And people told me this. The test tools are written, protocol test tools, it's not written for completeness. Because your question is about completeness. Like, because what they do is they take the spec and they have an algorithm. They derive all kind of requirement and they have a long list of requirement. And then they generate, actually a lot of it is automated, generate some test program and they have to pick which requirement they want to test. And then they will go and write also some functional tests. But they don't do everything because some of them, they will say, yeah, this is not very critical, etc. So they have a way to decide.
And we don't write the protocol docs to describe everything.
Correct.
So. The protocol docs are not helpful, for instance.
Yeah.
They don't explain why something happens. They just say such and such
Correct.
Must happen. Okay, that's a testable assertion, right? That's all they say.
So, but for yours, I would make sure we have coverage. If we don't, then we can file a bug to fix it. Yeah, because we can do that. We can always add new test cases, so amend the test code and add more test cases. So that's something we can do.
So one of the things that SMB Torture tells us and that was really interesting is basically which bits of the protocol don't matter in terms of changeability, because sometimes we detect variance in behavior between different Windows versions as Windows evolves.
Yes.
And yes, that's one of them. I mean, and these are very subtle semantics.
Correct.
And essentially, as soon as we see that there's a difference between two versions of Windows, or two or three versions of Windows, our first assumption is this a bug? And then if it's not a bug, then it's, okay, this is something that didn't actually matter. One of the best one examples I have of that was that it was a really subtle locking change that Windows did. And I reported this initially to Doc Helpers, oh, this is a bug, you've changed your locking semantics. And then when somebody looked at it really closely, they said, no, the actual case that you're testing in this very specific case can make no difference to the outcome.
Oh, okay.
So it was an optimization that Windows had done internally to just drop drop that behavior. And things like that are just incredibly useful for exploring the corner areas of the protocol.
If you find any of them, please.
No, I could look it up.
Please flag it to us.
No,
please.
No, I already did, and somebody explained it to me.
So we want
the test was
catch all those. And
so basically, one of our tests essentially fails against Windows because we're testing something that was optimized out. So it passed against an earlier version of Windows and now fails, but the Windows behavior is correct in both cases, and that's things like that.
I will say that when we look to modify the protocol as we create a new dialect or add a new feature, we look very carefully at the document to make sure we're not going to make anything broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only thing we have to go on is the way we have documented the protocol.
Right.
Right? We can't go analyze N thousand versions and say we will break these versions if we make a mistake. So we have a warranty behavior that leaves a lot of gray area, I'm afraid. But
yeah.
Okay, one more question.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to say it's like, he who has never used NT4, please be the first one to throw rocks at me. what is, it's like, I still have a lot of customers running Samba 3 NT4 with growing difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
What is Microsoft's strategy about end-of-lifing NT4? What should I say to my customers? Beside the obvious answer.
So your customer, so let me make sure I got it right. He's running NT4, you mean? Or Samba, okay. Yeah, Andrew left the room, right? He always asks, every time we have a release of Windows, he will ask, hey, the NT4 style domain join is now working with this new Windows client, etc. So, I mean, the broad answer I can give is NT4, in terms of support, we have an end of life for maybe a century ago, right? It's a long time ago. So, but more specific, we don't do things to break NT4. It's just like we don't go back and test, you know, all those old releases, because not just NT4, but the previous one that are no longer supported. We don't just do new things explicitly to break them, but those scenarios are no longer like tested to make sure they're still working. And for a lot of times, it's still working. Sometimes it needs some tweak. But yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, I don't have like the complete answer for that, I would say. But
from a protocol perspective, every document has a list of applicable SKUs. And there are some that will list NT4, some list Windows, like Windows 2000. Millennium Edition, all yeah. kinds of really old DOS versions yeah. and weird stuff. And at the time, we were confident of the statement that was made, but there's no longer a product support, even on extended support, these products are dead. So, you know, there's clearly no warranty, but most of the protocols that we're talking about today begin world, practically speaking, at Windows XP and server, whatever it was at the time, 2003, I guess. There are a few that go back to Windows 2000 and Windows 2000 Server, but those products, you know, the Windows 2000 products are barely in extended support. So what you're really asking is, I think, is a product statement, and we can't make that.
Yeah, but I probably can find out who can talk to you if you need contact. So you have a customer in the field, right? You have a customer and it's the application. Maybe it's an opportunity for you to convince them to upgrade. Samba.
Connecting to the internet and let various nefarious people find them. That would fix it very quickly.
All right.
So we are now out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good talk.
Thank you.